In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Thanks for listening on Thursday, May 2nd, 2013, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Today, it's Industry Chatter in the 3 o'clock hour, as we do every Thursday at 3. And my guest today is Tiffany Jones, head of the Public Sector Strategy and Programs for Symantec. Tiffany, it's great to see you. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me, Francis.
Happy to do it. Tell me about the services that you provide for public sector customers, because I think of most people, when they think of Symantec, think of antivirus and that kind of thing, but it's not all that.
Right. Clearly, Norton is a big brand of ours, focusing on the consumer segment. But we obviously have a huge enterprise business as well, focused on information security solutions, information management and availability, backup software solutions, among many others. In fact, our portfolio is more than 200 products today.
Tell me about the information management piece of that, because that's the part I think a lot of people have heard us talk on this station and so on about security, but the management piece of it doesn't get nearly as much attention, I don't think.
I think you're absolutely right. Cyber and IA, or information security, depending on your mission in the government, is really a hot topic right now. But I think one of the things that many customers often miss is the whole concept of managing information throughout its life cycle. So you can't actually secure your information if you're not managing it properly. And so management and protection of your data is really an important concept, and it's one that I'm spending a lot more time with customers talking about today.
What do you think is driving that? Any one or two items in particular?
Yeah, a couple of things. Number one, attackers in cyber today are not attacking typically for, notoriety or hacktivism. Most of the major advanced persistent threats and sophisticated attacks are really going after one thing, and that is information, right? And so it's quite easy to go after information if it isn't properly managed. And I'm talking to a lot of customers today about, hey, what's your information security strategy, right? And often they're like, well, I'm going to put in a bunch of perimeter software, endpoint security, and I feel pretty good about that. But what they can't answer typically is where their information actually exists. What information do they actually care about? Because you don't have to protect all information at the same level.
Mm-hmm.
And then what are your policies around that? And from there, that should drive your strategy, the development of your policy, and then your technology buys, among other things.
Well, and that kind of an approach, the way that you describe it there, doesn't sound to me like someone who is using that approach has really thought about all of the various threats that are out there. If you're just going to dig a moat around your castle, that means that somebody can't ride their horse and come and get you, but they can certainly shoot flaming arrows into the castle. So it doesn't sound like that's really being thoughtful about all the possible ways that somebody could try to steal your stuff.
I think that's right. And I think, while endpoint security is important, it's table stakes today. And you need to have a more thoughtful approach to data protection.
Mm-hmm. The customers that you talk to, the potential customers that you talk to, what's maybe number one, two, and three on their list of concerns or the things that they're asking you about?
So, and it's something that is really driving our enterprise strategy and our public sector strategy going forward. We have a new CEO by the name of Steve Bennett, who recently came to us, I think most recently as CEO of Intuit, and was part of that huge turnaround. He's also a former protege of Jack Welch and comes with a very experienced kind of Six Sigma process, which is really refreshing,
mm-hmm.
actually. And so he's having us actually take a step back and look at the higher level of jobs and underserved needs of our customers in order to really refocus Symantec and our offerings mm-hmm. to those specific markets. So that's been a fascinating process. One of the things that we're obviously hearing a lot about, as are other companies, is the drive of Internet of Things, digital strategies, mobility and how BYOD is really changing a lot of customers' perspectives on how to protect and manage information in their environment. And I would also say the drive towards cloud, whatever that means, mm-hmm. right? And you know, we can talk about that a little bit in more detail, because cloud can mean lots of different things to different people.
Yeah, that's, and I will note for the listeners that you used air quotes when you talked about cloud, and it strikes me as odd that we're, what, 3 or 4 years into the cloud concept, and it continues to evolve and change, and there are still, it does still mean different things to different people, and different people use it in different ways, and that seems to be kind of contrary to the idea that, well, we as a government are going to try to establish policies that pertain to cloud, mm-hmm. and how you go about doing that.
Yeah, and I think we definitely support the federal government's drive towards, you know, Steve Van Roekel's digital strategy that was released fairly recently, mm-hmm. right, followed by the mobility report, the activities going on around Cloud First and FedRAMP, and all of that is, you know, very positive overall. They're really looking to try to enable the leading edge technologies, right, and enable services that are going to be handed to U.S. citizens and their constituencies. That's all well and good. But, you know, you also have to look at your respective agency or department, the mission that you're in, the type of information you have, and determine what kind of cloud strategy is the right strategy for you. For example, you know, we're having conversations with the Department of Defense right now around something called JIE, mm-hmm. the Joint Information Environment. And they're looking strongly at cloud and shared services for the broader DoD. Well, what's interesting about that is they're going to have a very different risk profile than, let's say, maybe a civilian agency who has, you know, fewer secrets to keep, less sensitive data, maybe FISMA low data, maybe some FISMA moderate, versus, you know, parts of Department of Defense where they're looking at FISMA moderate to high in many cases, mm-hmm. they're going to have to think about things very differently from a cloud perspective. And maybe they're not going to think about, oh, we're going to drive towards a bunch of public cloud offerings. Maybe their offerings are more around community clouds or really private clouds in the decks, or, you know, held by a specific, you know, service. Mm-hmm. Providing shared services to a broader group, you handle those things very differently, and you approach it differently. And in any case, you know, we're trying to help customers go through how do you secure and enable the right cloud environment for you.
The concept of classifying information, classifying data, and determining how secure it needs to be, how far along, and I know it's hard to say because different agencies progress at different levels, but overall, how much progress do you think the government is making at being able to do that successfully? Because the difference between doing it and doing it successfully, I suppose.
I think we're a long way from that. Most of the conversations and most of the initiatives I see underway are largely focused around perimeter security still. Cloud, they're definitely looking at cloud shared services. They're looking at data center consolidation. Very little movement towards use of technologies like data loss prevention, for mm-hmm. example. But it's increasing. Where I would say private sector is actually leading is around the use of some of those kinds of best practices. Mm-hmm. Financial services, for example. I mean, obviously they're in the business of storing, managing, protecting critical information pertaining to, you know, banking information, right, trading, et cetera. And so they have really taken the lead, I think, from a critical infrastructure perspective around the protection of information, more so than many others.
You mentioned mobility, and information categorization seems to me to be a pretty important consideration for developing a mobile strategy. Let's talk about that when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest is Tiffany Jones of Symantec, and we'll continue our conversation in just a minute on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
washing machines.
You don't need two cappuccino makers.
Or two snowblowers.
Or two bad knees.
No, you don't need two t-shirts that say, "Kiss me, I'm Irish."
Definitely not.
And your government agency doesn't need two mobility management solutions.
It's unproductive, costly, and annoying.
Kind of like a commercial with two announcers.
Introducing the Citrix Zen Mobile Solution. The mobility management solution that gives your employees the freedom to work from anywhere on any device. And gives you the ability to secure and control devices without having to deploy multiple solutions.
With Citrix Zen Mobile, you can secure and manage your workforce devices, apps, and data from one centralized point.
Your employees get secure email, browsing, and a unified app store.
And you can isolate sensitive apps and data using Citrix Mobile App Containerization technology.
Citrix offers the only end-to-end enterprise mobility management solution you need to provide a completely flexible and secure mobile workplace.
Visit Citrix.com/US government to learn more.
That's Citrix.com/US government.
You always have to have the last word.
That's right.
Stop me if you've heard this one. A woman with a serious case of the sniffles goes to see her doctor. She leaves with a mammogram, an eye exam, diabetic screening, and prescription for that sniffling nose. No? We have. See, at Kaiser Permanente, our system uses the latest technology to set a new standard of connected care. So when you visit your doctor, your care team will have access to your medical history. They can see if you need to make any appointments, fill prescriptions, or if you're overdue for any potential life-saving screenings, like a mammogram. Then they can instantly schedule one, often in the same day at the same facility. This advanced model of care has helped us achieve the highest mammogram screening rate in the nation. Okay, now stop me if you've heard this one. A member walks into a Kaiser Permanente facility. The entire staff works together to make sure that they live well, be well, and thrive. Pretty sure you've heard that one before. Not a member yet? Learn more at kp.org/midatlantic. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated. 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Here's an inspiring story provided by Insperity.
I'm Stacy Redman, President and CEO of Strategy and Management Services, or SAMS. SAMS is an SBA 8A business that provides a broad range of strategy, management, and IT-related services to federal government agencies and commercial clients. Since 2011, we've gone from 4 employees to 80 employees. This growth would not have been possible without Insperity. Insperity gives us the resources of a large corporation in areas like HR, payroll, recruiting, training, and consulting on compliance issues. It's comforting to know that we have Insperity in our corner.
Insperity understands the many challenges faced by the federal contracting community. You need the right resources to give you the competitive advantage. Insperity's multi-state infrastructure gives you big company resources without compromising your status. Call 800-465-3800 or visit Insperity.com. Insperity, inspiring business performance.
Cyber attackers are getting more aggressive, but the federal government is stepping up its game. I'm Emily Kopp. On Thursday's Federal Drive, we'll talk with Ron Ross of the National Institute of Standards and Technology about a new computer security guidebook. And Federal News Radio's Jason Miller joins us to discuss green buildings. It all starts at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Tiffany Jones of Symantec, my guest on Industry Chatter today. Mobile is obviously something, Tiffany, that every agency's thinking about or deciding how to approach. And BYOD strategies really, the word that I get is driving people crazy. And nobody will come out and say it, I don't think. But it seems to be a big challenge for people to figure out what makes sense and how to manage all of this stuff. As agencies really try to codify mobile device management strategies and mobile data strategies, what are the things that they should be paying attention to that maybe are getting lost in the shuffle right now?
Yeah, good question, Francis. I think there's a few things. Number one, I heard before he left, the former CIO of the VA, Roger Baker, make a statement at a conference, which was BYOD, if we as CIOs don't change the way we enable our employees within the agency to be empowered around mobility, we're going to be out of business pretty soon. We're going to be no longer relevant mm-hmm. as a function. So we can't any longer continue to say no, right? We need to find a way to enable, but to do it in a secure fashion, right? And so the second thing I'll say about that is there's no one right way to do this. It really depends on the agency's environment, again, their mission, what their particular information security kind of stature is, their risk posture, and whether or not they really will be able to enable a BYOD strategy. There are a number of agencies who are going down that path and can absolutely do it. But then there are agencies where BYOD doesn't make sense, right? So, and what I mean by that is they should still consider enabling different types of devices in the environment, whether it's, you know, an iOS platform, Android, tablets, whatever. But they need to think about whether or not the device needs to be managed. And equally important, whether or not the applications and the information, you know, residing on that device or in the cloud needs to be managed and protected.
What I wonder if we are struggling with or even thinking about the right way is that exact part of it, the app management. And by apps, I don't just mean you download it from the iTunes store for 99 cents or whatever. I go back to when the telework first started and people were using their home PCs for telework. And people were thinking, well, I'll just log into the VPN and do my thing and I'll communicate with everybody and I'll do it once every 2 weeks and it's no big deal, except for the fact that they had file sharing software that their 13-year-old kid had installed to share songs, and all of a sudden this stuff is floating all over the place and you're finding, you know, classified stuff on BitTorrent. That happened, and it strikes me that that possibility exists in this generation again, and I wonder to what level the agencies are thinking about that and companies like yours are thinking about that.
I think they're just beginning to think about that. Most conversations we initially have when we ask a customer, what's your kind of mobile strategy? It's, oh yeah, I'm really thinking hard about, you know, MDM, mobile device management. But again, that's only focused on managing the device, and there's only so far you can go, right, technically, in terms of managing the device. Where it doesn't really help you is exactly what you stated. It doesn't help you with regards to managing and protecting applications, information received through those applications. And so, you know, we are really working more closely with a number of customers to kind of think through that a little bit more thoroughly. We just recently, in the last 2 weeks, released our latest Internet Security Threat Report. And it's available for free at symantec.com. But one of the key pieces of information in there is that, you know, malware continues to be on the rise, right? And not just on traditional platforms, but also on mobile devices. It's increasingly growing, and the more popular those platforms become, the more vulnerabilities that are going to be identified and exploited ultimately. Mm-hmm. But there are a ton of vulnerabilities also residing in applications, and it's actually a very common way right now of being able to gain access to really critical information.
And we're seeing, too, that for a long time, people assumed, well, Apple is much tighter with their perimeter security than the Android devices are, but that's not even a guarantee anymore either. I mean, the iOS is not perfect.
No, it's not. And we have in the report, we released actually the number of vulnerabilities in 2012 associated with iOS versus Android platforms and whatnot. And if memory serves me correctly, there were over 200 vulnerabilities associated with the iOS platform for mobile devices specifically. Now, the other interesting thing, though, is that there was no direct correlation to exploits from the number of vulnerabilities on the platform. So in the case of iOS, while there were a large number of vulnerabilities, only one type of attack focused on one particular vulnerability on the iOS. Now, we think that's going to change over time. But for now, no direct correlation between number of vulnerabilities and number of attacks on that platform.
Why do you think that is? That seems counterintuitive.
Yeah, well, you know, we actually saw that similarly on the Macs, you know, on laptops. Remember I remember even just a few years ago, there were a number of folks who before Macs were extremely popular, like, oh, you know, I only use a Mac because it's inherently more secure, mm-hmm. right? You would hear that all the time, or I have a Mac, so I don't need antivirus software, right? But you'll see from the numbers that over time, as that platform became more popular, the number of vulnerabilities increased. And then ultimately, the tail behind that was, you know, more exploits associated with that platform.
I remember having a conversation with a person who was of that mind saying, no, the reason you don't need antivirus is because your OS has 5% market share right now, and the bad guys don't care about you because they're going to go and pick on the 95% of people. And that's obviously changed now because of the dynamic in the consumer marketplace where people want to use that stuff. And so there's a market there. There's money to be made by exploiting that. That's
absolutely
what really the driver is for all of this, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, 0-day vulnerabilities are probably, you know, obviously the most expensive. And those are vulnerabilities that haven't been publicly released or known out in the public, but get exploited at the 0-day. We saw it actually very advanced, sophisticated campaign. We released a paper on called the Elderwood Project, and we believe that campaign, that group, is associated with the same group that released the Hydrac Aurora attacks on a number of companies, including Google, among others, back a few years ago. They used more than 8 zero-day vulnerabilities Jeez. In one particular attack set. Pretty sophisticated and quite expensive.
We need to take another break, but we've both used a term in this conversation so far that I want to ask you when we come back if maybe we should move beyond and stop using. And we'll do that in a minute on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Tiffany Jones of Symantec is my guest, and we'll continue in a moment.
About energy efficiency? You should. Technology exists now that can save your company a bundle on energy, make your business more competitive and sustainable, and make you look like an efficiency guru. See it live at Experience Efficiency, an interactive event coming to DC in June. Explore innovative new solutions that will change the way we all work, learn, and play. To register for this free event, go to schneider-electric.com.
When faced with opportunities and challenges, it's important to have a reliable information technology partner on your side. Make a confident choice with GovConnection. Our extensive experience serving the federal marketplace ensures we can identify and apply the right purchasing vehicles to equip your organization with the right tools to accomplish your mission. The IT marketplace is full of companies who claim to be different. Choose GovConnection and we'll prove it to you. Call GovConnection today at 800-800-0019. That's 800-800-0019. Sponsored by Cisco.
The year was 1957. The date was October 4th. And Americans woke up to a strange new reality. The first satellite launched into space wasn't ours. The Russians had gotten there first. Sputnik 1 may have been the size of a beach ball, but it was the space shot heard round the world.
Today, a new moon is in the sky.
And it galvanized the nation into action. The Martin Company rose to meet the challenge. Then, on St. Patrick's Day, 1958, a Martin-built Vanguard rocket roared into space with a shamrock taped to its side. And put the world's first solar-powered satellite into orbit. 4 months later, the president signed the legislation that created NASA. The rest, as they say, is history. A history that is still being written by the scientists and engineers of Lockheed Martin. Their story is our story. See it unfold at LockheedMartin.com/100 years.
The National Ovarian Cancer Coalition's Northern Virginia chapter invites you to break the silence on ovarian cancer by signing up for the Break the Silence 5K and Teal Mile, scheduled for Saturday, May 18th at Fairfax Corner, Fairfax, Virginia. Race starts at 8:30 a.m. and includes a pre-race pasta dinner at Packet Pickup, event day Teal Zone Family Fun Area, and a celebration with the Parade of Survivors. Register online at ovarian.org. That's ovarian.org.
A tip to quit. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Bill used to smoke. He's had diabetes since he was a kid. At 37, smoking cigarettes caught up with him. His kidneys began to fail, and he began to have trouble breathing. By 40, Bill's life had changed forever.
I've had open-heart surgery. I've lost my left leg. I'm blind in my right eye. I mean, I am the reason people shouldn't smoke.
The Tips from Former Smokers campaign features real people like Bill who are suffering as a result of smoking or secondhand smoke.
I've got a tip for you. If I'd have known that I had as many problems I had from the smoking, I never would have started ever.
Don't smoke. It causes disease of the heart and lung as well as various forms of cancer. If you do smoke, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW for free help. Learn more at betobaccofree.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
For over a century, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth in our nation's capital. The club's new STEAM initiative uses the arts to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. Today, more than ever, we need your support of STEAM. It will encourage our youth to think rather than memorize, create rather than copy, and to be resourceful rather than reserved. So visit boysandgirlsclubs.org. Send a dollar or more as an investment to help us help our kids pick up STEAM. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, great futures start here.
This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Tiffany Jones of Symantec, my guest on Industry Chatter today. And I mentioned earlier that we've used a term a couple of times already in our conversation, Tiffany, that might be time to get rid of. And that is MDM, mobile device management. And the reason that I wonder if that might not be wise is because maybe we've been overcome by events and maybe the concept of securing devices isn't enough. And maybe it's time for something that's a little more holistic. Is that a possibility, at least?
I think it is a possibility. I wouldn't say necessarily that MDM is, you know, not important, but I would frame it as table stakes also, similar to using endpoint protection, you know, antivirus and whatnot on your endpoint. But what I will say is I think we're seeing And we are, in fact, making investments in this area as well. We'll be kind of rolling out our next version of our mobile workforce productivity suite, right? And so you think about the offering more holistically based on the market needs and the challenges that our customers are experiencing. They're not experiencing, you know, that attackers are hacking into these devices for the sake of hacking into these devices. What are they after? They're after the information, right? And so it's really important that we be thinking holistically about the problems our customers are facing and how we address that head on, right, with a selection of kind of capabilities.
How complicated is that idea of anticipating what your customers need when they don't always know what they need because they can't necessarily identify the threats, and especially they can't always attribute the threats, so they don't know what they're or who they're defending against?
That is a challenge, whether you're in government, enterprise, you know, small business. And it's something where we've been spending a significant amount of R&D dollars over the last 5 years on, because it's pretty easy to focus on and protect against the known bad guys, right? The known bad pieces of malware. It's actually pretty easy to protect against, or, you know, and allow for the good or the known good stuff. So the black and white, but there's this growing span in between of all of this unknown threat space that's been really difficult to identify and mitigate against, especially with kind of what were traditional AV signature-based kind of protections. And so Symantec has spent a lot of time and energy really focused on that particular problem set to allow us to focus on a lot of the unknown. And so we've rolled out a bunch of really interesting capabilities known as reputation-based capabilities. And we're actually looking at a lot of interesting metadata that we hadn't looked at traditionally. So, for example, we are on hundreds of billions of endpoints globally. And so we're able to pull metadata off of these endpoints about, hey, so what is every single executable that's out there today? All right, so we spot an executable. Okay, on how many endpoints is that? Okay, maybe it's on five. Interesting. On that many endpoints, the reputation of that thing immediately goes down. So then we do further assessment, and this is in real time, right, around heuristics and behavioral capabilities of that thing. And is it doing what it's supposed to be doing? And ultimately, we can give a lot more intelligence to our customers to make decisions based on their risk profile. So a customer in the DoD may say, okay, my threshold for reputation is only, you know, highly, you know, confident, known good, or fairly certain it's good stuff, will allow through. Everything else, forget about it, block it. For our consumer base, we actually make a lot of those choices for our consumers because that's why they've, you know, purchased the capability from us, because they want that. They want that protection. So there are a lot of interesting things we're doing. That's just one example.
As the as classifying this stuff reputationally becomes more common and more popular, how much does the danger of spoofing increase, and how much more defensive do you and do your customers have to become to that concept? And I know it's not a strict analogy, but I think of all the phishing exercises that people are seeing, where you think it's coming from me, but it's not actually coming from me.
Absolutely. And we see that day in and day out. We see today about a third of the world's email traffic comes through Symantec. And so we have a really good sense of the spam and phishing attacks that are taking place every day. Phishing, still alive and well. Spam, still alive and well. In fact, our Internet Security Threat Report identifies that still today, in 2012, 70% of the world's email is still spam.
Well, it must work. I mean,
it must work, right?
You wouldn't keep doing it if it didn't work. That's a basic tenet of business.
Absolutely. And phishing, absolutely, is still working. A lot of cyber crime organizations utilizing it for financial gain. But increasingly, we're seeing socially engineered campaigns that are highly targeted to one or two individuals within a company or an agency or organization. And the assumption, by the way, that these attackers are only targeting the CEO level or the head of an agency is not true. In fact, you know, in our report, it identifies that, you know, the heads of R&D, right, IT administrators, think of the jobs and functions in those organizations that have access to control of many accounts or access to a lot of the intellectual property and secrets.
Well, I want to continue on that thread when we come back, because we've talked for a long time in this field about outsider threats and insider threats. And there seems to be, you talked about gray areas, there seems to be a gray area there among those two choices that I want to talk about when we continue on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Tiffany Jones of Symantec, my guest, and we'll continue in just a second.
The Ballistic Missile Defense Report, provided by Raytheon.
Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Martin Dempsey, told Congress work is being done to understand defense options against long-range ballistic missiles. While an East Coast missile defense site is one option, sea-based assets are also under consideration. Standard Missile 3s are the U.S.'s only sea-based ballistic missile defense asset. The missile can also be land-based and is on schedule for deployment to Romania in 2015.
5 million hours of experience, 22 direct hit intercepts, unmatched engineering. Raytheon Standard Missile 3 is preserving freedom at home and around the world. Now Raytheon engineers are developing the next generation SM-3. When seconds matter and there's no margin for error, Raytheon Standard Missile 3 protects. In fact, there's nothing standard about it. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission.
Furloughs are officially underway at federal agencies. Employees at EPA, Labor, and FAA are among those that have already taken at least one unpaid day off. How will furloughs affect government employees on a personal level? What are agencies doing to clear furlough-related backlogs? Get the latest on sequestration's impact on federal employees, agencies, and contractors on Federal News Radio's sequestration page. Find it all at federalnewsradio.com/sequestration.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
Some federal employees are trying to start an emergency workplace fundraiser for victims of the Boston bombings. Kim Ainsworth is executive director of the Greater Boston Federal Executive Board.
The solicitation was approved for the eastern part of Massachusetts. We can now start internally, either building-wide or internal to agencies or government-wide, hosting fundraising-type events to benefit the various organizations.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Tiffany Jones of Symantec is my guest. And we talked just a moment ago about some of the challenges that we're having in this area and when it comes to security. And we talked earlier in the program about mobile device and insider threats and all of that. There's a gray area that I wonder if we're thinking about the right way yet. For a long time, we've categorized threats as either external threats or internal threats. And when we think about spoofing and phishing and all of these kinds of things, maybe there's a middle ground or a gray area where somebody who's inside your organization isn't an internal threat in the classic case of a bad actor, I want to deliberately steal information, or, you know, a WikiLeaks type person or something like that. But somebody who is either poorly trained or doesn't consider themselves, they don't think they should have to follow the rules or whatever. Buckshot Yankee is an example of this. Technically, that's not an insider threat because they're not trying to expose the network to vulnerabilities, but they're doing it anyway. And so I wonder if that's something that we're paying enough attention to, the unintentional insider threat, I guess, for lack of a better name.
Yeah, I think I understand exactly your scenario there, because that is oftentimes how the bad actor actually gets in the first place. It's typically a socially engineered, phishing attack, where someone, foolishly, or maybe it looked very legitimate. There's a particular type of attack that we think is going to be on the rise going forward called the watering hole attack, which is fascinating.
Tell me about that.
Unlike phishing, right, someone, a legitimate person, an end user, let's say I'm going to do some holiday shopping on Amazon, right? And I go to the Amazon website, but little do I know that something called an iframe has popped up in front of the legitimate web page.
Okay.
It's because an attacker has hacked in to the web server that hosts the application and has injected that iframe, right? And so when I start typing in the information I need to, or I click on a link to go look at that shirt for my mother, I have literally just clicked on the equivalent of what would be a phishing attack, right? A link, some sort of executable, and now I'm had. Mm-hmm. I'm had. And that...
Your machine or your data or both?
Well, so typically if it's a vulnerability that's exploited, it could do any number of things, but typically in a lot of these that we're seeing, it allows the attacker to get command and control, access or access to information, or maybe it's a keylogger, where it's capturing all the keys that you're, putting in. It can do any number of things, whatever they're looking for. Mm-hmm. And so that's a scenario where me as the end user, I can't be educated really on that. It's a completely legitimate web page that I'm going to, and it looks completely legitimate.
Yeah, you didn't do anything that you shouldn't have done.
I didn't do anything from an awareness and education perspective that would have, you know, prevented that from happening. And so part of this is, yes, I think there's still an aspect that is absolutely what are the best practices that we as end users or consumers need to be doing, right? Run endpoint protection on our computers and, you know, make sure that we're, when we're typing in, you know, banking information, that it's on a secure, you know, page or, you know, all these types of things. But at the same time, there's definitely accountability on the side of these providers, right? To make sure that the server that hosts the web application is secure.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, you know, there's enough, obviously, you know, accountability to go around on lots of these examples of attacks that we hear about day in and day out.
Is are we at a point where trying to do complete cyber hygiene is just a fairy tale? It's a fool's errand.
I don't think so. And, you know, while I am a glass half full kind of person, I'm also not naive to think that it's the silver bullet. But some really interesting research has come out over the last few years by NSA and SANS and NIST and a number of others, which is actually what's driving the continuous monitoring initiative in the federal government right now. You've heard of the CAG, critical controls. Well, if you actually look at the top five critical controls, and those are focused on, you know, hardware inventory, software inventory, secure configuration, malware defense, and vulnerability management, those top five best practices or controls that you focus on as an organization, research shows that your risk posture, your risk actually goes down by 90%.
Mm-hmm.
For your environment, which is pretty impressive by just taking, you know, some steps to deal with those kinds of the basics, right? The basic blocking and tackling, you know, defense measures are still very important and can really reduce the white noise mm-hmm. in the environment. That will actually allow your organization to focus its the rest of its resources and people on the more sophisticated threats.
But at what point, maybe there's not a way to quantify it. My question was going to be, at what point do you reach diminishing returns where it is so expensive and so resource intense mm-hmm. to go after that last little slice of security that, but I guess that really depends on the kind of data that you're protecting, I would imagine.
You're absolutely right. It really depends on the risk posture and the amount of risk you're willing to assume,
mm-hmm.
right?
We're going to wrap up our conversation in a minute. Tiffany Jones is my guest from Symantec, and we'll finish in a minute on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose.
Giving you the edge on healthy living. Here's Mayo Clinic Medical Edge. American soldiers are killing themselves in alarming numbers.
The concern with military suicides, and particularly suicides in the Army, is in that there's been an 80% increase in the number of suicides between 2004 and 2008.
In 2012, suicides were outpacing combat deaths. Dr. Timothy Lineberry, a Mayo Clinic psychiatrist and suicide expert, says the suicide rate in the U.S. Army exceeds the rate in the general population. So what can we do? Dr. Lineberry says we need to limit access to firearms for those with suicidal tendencies. We also need to screen for sleep disturbances.
Sleep is a risk factor for suicide.
Finally, he says we need to be careful about prescribing opioid medications and improve primary care treatment for depression. For more information, talk with your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org. I'm Tracy McCray.
This is Aileen Black, Vice President of VMware Federal. When it comes to issues like IT consolidation and cloud computing, it can't be overstated. Experience matters. More federal IT infrastructure is virtualized on VMware to create elastic, self-healing, on-demand pools of IT resources than any other platform. In fact, our experience is one of the attributes noted in Gartner's Magic Quadrant on server virtualization. Chances are you know a VMware user Most civilian and defense agencies use our technology to benefit their missions. Their VMware experience is evidence of the dramatic benefits virtualization delivers. Users can see up to 90% reduction in cost.
The Federal News Radio CXO Survey 2013 Priorities, underwritten by VMware and Carahsoft, provides insight into CIO's top priorities in 2013. Cloud, mobile, big data, and the changing landscape of budgets. Go to federalnewsradio.com. Keyword survey to see the results.
The 6th Annual Wine and Food Festival at National Harbor is Saturday and Sunday, May 4th and 5th. Saturday at 3, try the high-end wine and spirits tasting on the beach, then chill out at the Gaylord's Poe's Rooftop Lounge with a sunset wine and cheese tasting. Sunday at 11, join Foodie and the Beast for a live radio broadcast with chefs like Scott Bruneau, Rock Harper, Mike Isabella, and Brian Voltaggio, who all lead demos later that day. For foodie fun and more, it's the 6th Annual Wine and Food Festival at National Harbor, sponsored by Mini USA. Visit wineandfoodnh.com for info.
PortfolioStat was first introduced by the Office of Management and Budget as a tool for agencies to assess their IT portfolios for duplicative programs, systems, and resources. In March 2013, the OMB released PortfolioStat 2.0, which incorporates best practices, integrates the Federal Data Center Consolidation Initiative, and streamlines agency reporting requirements. Join FCA Bethesda on May 22nd as agency executives take a look at how these new processes will better drive IT management and investments. Register today at fciabethesda.org/maybreakfast.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Tiffany Jones of Symantec is my guest on Industry Chatter today. One concept that you mentioned earlier in the program that I wanted to explore before I let you out of here today. It sounds like I'm holding you against your will, which is really not my intent. What's really funny is you're looking out the window at the police station. Mm-hmm. So if it was really that terrible, you'd be at least in the right place. At any rate, you mentioned the concept of the Internet of Things earlier in the hour. And this concept is fascinating to me because right now I think primarily we're talking about it from a consumer perspective, all the cool things that you or I could do in our home if particular items or devices are hooked up to the Internet. The implications, though, for governments, and not just the federal government, but for all kinds of governments, I think are a lot more dramatic than maybe people are thinking or talking about yet. The example I used when we were talking off the air was, what if all of the traffic lights in the district were on the Internet, controlled via the Internet, somebody were able to hack into that infrastructure? Wouldn't necessarily be destructive, probably just a few fender benders here and there. But economically, I mean, if they were all out for a week, that's a really big economic problem for the city to have. What do you see coming that might be some warning signs from a government perspective from the Internet of Things?
Well, you're right. We often think of the Internet of Things as the consumerization of IT and enablement around that. But you're right. Everyone is leveraging the power of the Internet to do lots of things. We actually have a business practice that focuses on utilities, for example. And, you know, you'll often go in to do a pen testing kind of assessment, a penetration testing or a health check. And you'll say, OK, well, which SCADA systems or PCS or systems are connected to the Internet? And they're like, well, you know, none. Right. Well, shortly thereafter, you find that printers and this and that that they don't normally think about mm-hmm. are, in fact, connected. And create an interesting injection point if someone were malicious and wanted to be able to gain access that way. And so, you know, government is definitely looking at these types of things much more frequently. The president's executive order that he released during the State of the Union articulates the need to have the government and private sector really work more collaboratively together as it relates to cybersecurity and critical infrastructure, both private sector critical infrastructure as well as government mm-hmm. infrastructure. And it's not something government can solve alone, because in this case, unlike in many other analogies, typically when there's a major attack or a set of events or incidences, it's the private sector who spots it first and has to take first responder kind of that role versus the government. And so it's important we work together. We're working with NIST on the establishment of these best practices and standards per the president's request. And we look forward to kind of building that framework out so that we have some voluntary kind of standards and best practices to all work from.
Is that how does that go? I mean, does the private sector usually want that kind of thing? Are they on board with that, or is that something that they kind of go look at apprehensively?
I think it depends on the sector. I think it depends on the company. I know from Symantec's perspective, we've been very supportive of it. But again, they're voluntary standards and best practices. There are highly regulated sectors out there. Even some of those sectors who are already regulated in that space feel like these best practices will be helpful to them and maybe make things more effective or more efficient from a regulatory perspective.
There's a lot more I'd love to cover with you. We just have about a minute and a half left. Of all of the things that we've talked about today, what are the things that the agencies you think are struggling with the most, or may be the least difficult for them to be able to find a solution for in, say, the next 6 months or so?
A couple of things. One, I would say with the continuous monitoring or CDM, the Continuous Diagnostics Mitigation Program that DHS is rolling out, they have about $200 million in funding. Agencies can apply for that grant funding to be able to fill the five requirements of the CAG controls. Number two, I would say agencies focus not just on perimeter, you know, management and security, but really on the full life cycle of information management and protection.
Tiffany, it's great to have you here today. Thanks very much for this conversation.
Thank you, Francis.
Tiffany Jones of Symantec, my guest on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. You can hear this conversation anytime, archived later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And hour number two of In Depth with Francis Rose coming in a minute.